Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Well, I'm always interested in an outside-in perspective on what's going on in our region, and I will say this. I've been watching Stanford and Cal basketball this season just to kind of see where they're going to end up, and Kyle Smith has locked down, guaranteed himself a winning season at Stanford, which is a big deal at Stanford. And no surprise, though, the guy just wins wherever he goes. Today, a little bit of news in the Stanford community as Bernard Muir apparently will be stepping down as the Stanford Athletic Director. Here to talk about all those things and a whole bunch more, our friend John Platts, who is not just a Stanford guy and not just somebody who played at Stanford, but he is the Stanford football and basketball broadcaster. He's the author of the book Farm Foundation and 100 Years, both Stanford books on football and basketball. He's a good follow on Twitter as well at JF Platts. John Platts, Bernard Muir, rapid reaction. What are people on campus saying about the AD announcing he's going to step down?
Oh, John, it's a newsy afternoon, as they say, right? I was tipped off by you, of all people,
yeah,
about an hour ago. So, you know, I've got a lot of contacts in my phone, and, you know, I've got lower-level athletics contacts, and then the senior people. Those are the ones that could confirm it, and none has done that as of yet. But let's put it this way, nobody is texting me saying no. So that's where I am on this.
Yeah, and, you know, the job has changed, hasn't it? Let's just talk in general terms so you don't get in trouble. Casey does decide he's coming back. Like, the job has changed. And it does, like, a lot of ADs are telling me this is not the same job that they took 5 years ago, 10 years ago, not the same business they were in 20 years ago. From your vantage point as a broadcaster on those two sports, football and basketball, what do you see that's different?
Well, I mean, it's the, you know, the NIL and the transferability of the athletes, and where does Stanford fit in that? In that ecosystem, and you know, Stanford has lost, particularly from football, Stanford has lost some players in the last couple of years, you know, some for strictly financial reasons. These are young men that likely will graduate from Stanford. At Stanford, you can stop out. You can leave school and then come back. And if you want to get credit someplace else, they may be transferable in toward your degree. So, you know, Ashton Daniels, the quarterback with whom you and I are familiar, of course, he's going to Auburn next year. He was at the Stanford baseball game on Friday. I was there as well. And he loves it at Stanford. But, you know, for some of these young men, you know, whether it's sort of advancing their professional prospects or the compensation that they can get, and at some of these SEC schools or others, the compensation can be quite considerable. So it is different. And, you know, for a Bernard Muir to manage that transition, it's challenging. It'd be challenging for anybody. I mean, his record is terrific. I mean, Stanford has had, 48 years of at least one NCAA championship, and he's presided over 13 of those years. That's the whole gamut of sports. And you talked about football, men's basketball, and it has been challenging, John, the last, three or four years, a little bit longer in basketball as far as, you know, the exceptional winning that Stanford had enjoyed in football about a decade ago and basketball a couple of decades ago. But those of us that have been with the program, you know, a long time, quarter century or more, know that there are cycles with this thing. The key thing is, can you be competitive? And I think the hires that Bernard Muir made, the most recent ones, Kyle Smith that you alluded to in basketball, and Troy Taylor in football, I think are right on. Now, why do I say that? Because to coach now at Stanford in this environment where athletes can leave and get paid, so to speak, you've got to love to coach there. I mean, you may have to forsake your dream of getting to a college football playoff or getting to the Final Four, where you know, Mike Montgomery didn't have to forsake that dream in basketball, and in football, David Shaw was very, very close. But now it may be that you don't get there because of the way the market or the way the industry is now in football, men's basketball. But if you love coaching there enough, and I can tell you from personal experience, both Troy Taylor and Kyle Smith, you know, this school is their dream job. You can quibble whether that should be or not, but for them, it is. And so in that sense, Bernard Muir made good hires, and so I think he's done as well as you can do, given the shifting sands, so to speak.
The Kyle Smith story at Stanford, I mean, No one who's watched Smith is surprised that he's winning, but you've watched it up close. What has this season been about? What does it mean to have a program, a men's basketball program, over 500?
Well, I mean, for a lot of us, again, who knew the number one rankings in the early 00s in the Final Four in 1998, and for Mike Montgomery, 12 NCAA tournaments in his 18 years of coaching, and you know, a couple since then. You know, it's definitely been fun to be a part of that again. And really, John, just to get to know Kyle Smith and see how unique he is. You know, I've seen a number of coaches come through here, and they all have strengths, and by and large, they've all been more or less successful, some more than others. But Kyle Smith has actually taught me some things, John. I mean, his analytics, he calls it nerd ball, and it's not just a Stanford term. He's been an analytics guy for a while now, and the numerical things that they tabulate with the eye in the sky at practices and whatnot is really astounding for those of us who played basketball, college basketball, 40 years ago, and there was no such thing. Coaches just watched you and they made a mental impression of you. But now there's all these numbers. Monday morning at 7 a.m., Kyle Smith is at a whiteboard and the players have sheets with computations on them and they talk about it. And so there's that. But Kyle Smith is part psychologist, John. He's one of his secret sauces with us is he's very transparent on the air, which most coaches want to be guarded. And I think Kyle Smith has concluded that transparency is it works with young people and the people around the program. It endears them to you. And, it's worked, John. And this despite going across the country four times in the last 8 weeks, that it's been daunting and Stanford has held its own.
Going to some of those ACC buildings must be really cool, right? You're in some places you never would have been, but you've got Eric Musselman, you got Mick Cronin, saying they're not wrong. That travel is no fun, and it's a long way to go. What has that felt like for you in a working capacity?
It has been challenging, John. I won't lie to you. I mean, it used to be an hour to Eugene or Los Angeles from the Bay Area, or 2 hours to Seattle or Phoenix. An hour and a half to Salt Lake, and now it's, 5 hours to Atlanta or five to Pittsburgh or, five and a half to Raleigh-Durham. And we're doing it every other week. But, I knew what was coming. And, the team flies on a small charter jet, so they try to make it as good for the students as possible. There's good internet on the planes, John, but they got to refuel once or twice, so that's not ideal. I'm doing commercials, so I do things like fly to Atlanta and then rent a car there and drive 2 hours to Clemson on New Year's Eve. That's kind of what my life has been like more or less every other weekend. But, John, it has been thrilling to be in places like the Cameron Indoor Stadium, which I was at a week and a half ago. Stanford played Duke, and then to be at the Dean Smith Center, 21,000 people showing up for a Saturday game. That's three times the size of Naples Pavilion. And Stanford won the game, John. I mean, it's the first time in 14 tries in Stanford program history that Stanford was able to knock off North Carolina. It was a 1-point win, last second shot by Jalen Blake's our point guard. But that was a thrill. And to be in places where college basketball is really valued in the entertainment marketplace was fun. So it's been kind of a mix, John. Sort of getting there has been tough, but once I'm there, it's been a lot of fun.
We're talking to John Platts, Stanford Radio, on football and on basketball. The basketball season feels like it's probably been more enjoyable, probably from a success standpoint. But you also have this vantage point, John, where you're watching and well aware of a 109-year-old conference and Oregon going off to the Big Ten and, everybody scattering. What has that been like for you to kind of rubberneck on the old world Pac-12, the legacy schools, as they go off into their new conferences and see Arizona State win the Big 12? And as you're watching all that unfold, what does that look like to you from Stanford?
Well, John, I think I can speak to a lot of your Oregon and Oregon State fans, and maybe Washington State if they're part of your network too, which I understand they are. For those of us that have been following the league for 30, 40, in my case, 50-plus years, going back to elementary school, I grew up in Los Angeles area. A lot of relatives went to USC, so I followed that program, but secondarily, every week I'd follow Oregon and UCLA and Cal and Stanford and Washington because they were in, quote, our lead. And it became a habit, a six-month habit, football and basketball, for half a century. And And it's weird now that I'm not doing that as much. I can't, because I need to devote my, you know, my mind space to, you know, Wake Forest and to Louisville and to Syracuse and schools like this. And so I haven't been able to follow the Pac-12 school. It's just been an adjustment, John, because I'm so just knee jerk wanting to know what's going on with Washington, Oregon. Now, I did watch the Oregon game this past Saturday morning and was very impressed. Wisconsin's a tough place to play, and Oregon got it done, and you know, impressed with Dana Altman, because he's doing that travel thing that all of us on the West Coast are doing. You know, every other week you've got, you know, two time zones or more, and he was able to get his team to rally in that second half and get it done. So very impressed with that. So we all have the same challenges. I'm trying to follow John the non-Cal former Pac-12 teams, and hopefully I get a few more opportunities maybe in the conference tournament season to do that.
Did it mean something for Stanford not just to beat Cal and its rival, because, you know, Mark Madsen being over there on the Cal bench, there were a lot of people going, gosh, Stanford should have hired that guy, and yet Stanford ended up with a pretty darn good coach and a good guy in Kyle Smith.
Well they did, and you know, I've known Mark, you know, for 25 years, and he's a delight. He's every bit in private what he is out front, you know, courteous, friendly, interested in you, and gives you, you know, time and conversation. We had them this past Saturday. It was a Mike Montgomery night, the former Stanford coach and Cal coach, by the way, was honored. You know, Mark has carved his path successfully. You know, he was at Utah State, John, and he won 28 games a couple years ago. And, you know, that's when Cal swooped in, and, you know, the timing for Stanford was the ideal coach for Stanford at the time the opening came up was Kyle Smith, because he took Washington State last year, you know, to the second round of the NCAA tournament. He had two guys, John, starting that are in the NBA now. That's how good he is at recognizing talent and developing it. I'm speaking of Jalen Wells, the wing from Memphis in the Memphis Grizzlies in the NBA, and then Isaac Jones is with the Sacramento Kings organization. So, you know, I think it's worked out well for Mark. I know he's happy at Cal. You know, he lives in the East Bay. John, he barts into work a lot, and people on BART chat him up. So, you know, Mark is a man of people and doing well at Cal and trying to build that program and doing it a different way than Stanford is. He's using a lot more NIL guys coming in, whereas Kyle Smith, like Troy Taylor, is saying, look, we're going to recruit you. We're going to develop you for 4 years. And if the pros are for you, we'll do our best to make it happen.
I am curious, too, what you think of the upcoming baseball season. Of course, Oregon State playing as an independent. Stanford's going to be Stanford. It's going to feel weird for me not to see, you know, Oregon and Oregon State playing at Sunken Diamond and getting a chance to play against Stanford. But, you know, what's your outlook for baseball, Platts? I know you're still tuned in to baseball.
Well, John, newsflash for you. This Stanford baseball team is, about a half hour ago, they just finished a four-game sweep of Washington at Sunken Diamond. So they're now 8-0. And I saw them, like I said, in person on Friday, and they looked great. They've got this sensation from Japan named Rintaro Sasaki. He's a freshman who went to high school in Japan. All-time high school home run hitter.
Yeah.
So he's playing first base and hitting third for Stanford. He hasn't. My understanding is he hasn't hit one out yet. I didn't see the box score earlier today. But he looks good and formidable, John. He's 6 feet, about 270 pounds, but he's pretty solid and can move. You know, this would be a great year for Stanford or State in baseball, and we won't get it. Stanford will again have the travel challenges, and the ACC is very formidable in baseball. John, this year, this just occurred to me. I thought this about now before coming on your show. The best player, or the most notable player for each of Stanford's football, men's basketball, and baseball teams this season are players not from the United States. Elikayo Manner is the big wide receiver. He's from Western Canada. He's probably going to be a second-day pick. He's the guy that caught 13 for 294 yards against Travis Hunter at Colorado a year ago in 2023. Maxime Renault, Stanford's 7'1" center, is averaging 20 points a game and 11 rebounds. He's going to be first-team All ACC, which is in an 18-team conference, is saying something. He's probably going to get some All-American consideration. And then, Rintaro Sasaki, the first baseman from Japan, the freshman, Johnny, when you see him, Johnny, he'll remind you of Will Clark. He's very expressive out there, albeit just being a freshman. So it's kind of been a very unique year in Stanford athletics, and obviously we've got a transition going on with leadership, it may be. So NIL swirling, and, you know, John, just take me to the games, to the kickoff and the tip, and I'll be happy.
Yeah, there you go. I like that. By the way, Sasaki 3-for-5 today. No home runs, but drove in 2. Not a bad start for him at first base. All right, John Platts, you're the best. Appreciate you, man. Good luck the rest of the way. Stay in touch.
John, thanks for having me on.
You bet. There he goes. John Platts. Put him on hold, Stephen. There you go. Great point. What a great fun fact. Trivia question. All Stanford's best players in all the sports, big sports, not U.S.-born players. So they're doing it internationally. That shouldn't surprise anybody in this new era. And I remember when Sasaki joined Stanford, he picked Stanford. He basically, there's a provision that, you know, had he allowed himself to be drafted by a Japanese baseball team, Sasaki would have had to stay in Japan and fulfilled that contract. But because he came to the United States and is playing at Stanford, he now can play, I believe, 2 seasons at Stanford and be eligible for the Major League Baseball draft, does not have to go to Japan and play. There's a loophole there, and he's apparently a really good hitter. And so he's hitting third for Stanford as a freshman, which is not so bad. Leave it here. More ahead.